All right. Thank you, Dare. I understand being in meetings, it's nice to get up, visit, get caffeine, sugar. I'm not immune to those things myself. But what Dare asked me to visit about is a project that I and my co-authors here are involved in to develop a web-based decision support tool to enable informed sire selection decisions. And so I'll visit a little bit about that and hopefully set the stage a bit for why we might contend that we need such a tool. If we think about sire selection, there's no doubt it's the most effective means at generating response in all traits, even those that are sex-limited. Too often, I believe that commercial producers think that they're making a genetic selection decision by culling the open cows. That's a management-level decision. The improvement you make in female fertility is related to the bulls that you use. Right, that's the driver of progress. The issue is sire selection happens at most really one time a year. And for some commercial producers, particularly of smaller scale, it may not happen annually. And so as a consequence, the familiarity with the tools and the process to some is cumbersome. I would contend that value is largely determined ad hoc if we think about the costing of germplasm, be it live bull or semen, that value is determined ad hoc. And somebody wants to argue with me at how you determine that value. I'm all ears for how you do it. And so as a consequence, I'd say the purchase price is sometimes, perhaps often, simply a function of available cash flow. And that cash flow may not necessarily be from the cattle enterprise. It could be from other enterprises. So I cut $8 corn. I'm going to go buy expensive bulls. That's not really the way we wish to value genetic selection decisions. Moreover, I'd say selection criteria need to contemplate and do breed. So there needs to be a breed choice, a breeder or provider, and then within those, the individual sires that we wish to utilize. So I'd be embarrassed if I told you how long it took me to make this graphic. Three things I hate in this world are Microsoft Excel, Microsoft Word, and Microsoft PowerPoint. but this is kind of how I boil down the decision-making process, and I encourage you to choose bulls that have heads on them, unless they've had semen collected. But we choose a breed, and that could be on perceived breed strengths. So, you know, I may think about Herefords the way they were 30 years ago. Or it could be on quantified current breed differences, i.e. data from the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center. We pick a breeder which could be based on reputation / popularity. I want to go to the coffee shop and brag that I bought a bull from so-and-so, which everyone knows. Or it could be based on the value that I receive from that service provider, which also could be related to the level of service they provide me as a customer. Then there's a plethora of data, and you'll notice I was careful to use data and not information because there's a difference between the two. Visual appraisal, qualitative traits like color, horn pulled, or genetic defect, carrier status, phenotypes, I'm talking about actual weights or adjusted weights, within contemporary group ratios, expected progeny differences, or breed/organization selection indices. So those are all things which we may encounter and try to utilize to make a sire selection decision. So it becomes an optimization game. Optimizing the objective needs from an economic perspective of the enterprise, of the cowherd, then the desires of the decision maker, the one that's actually buying the bulls. And if we're honest with ourselves, those two don't always point us in the same direction, do they? I think I made the example over there. We may have the highest indexing, or let's say the highest genetic merit sire, who maybe is also the best buy, but he's ugly-headed. By God, I don't want to have to look at an ugly-headed bull every day. So I don't buy him. Some of us laugh at that. Some of us aren't laughing, are we? financial resources. So how much money do I have to spend, and what else could I spend that money on? And then the allocation of time, desire, selection, the activity slash the chore. How much time do I want to spend tonight going through semen catalogs or bull sale catalogs, or how many bull sales do I want to go to? Maybe that's dependent on the lunch that they have, right? So we need a simplified strategy. Identify needs based on clearly defined breeding objectives. Breeding objective, of course, think of it as the mission statement that drives the decisions you make. We need to reduce data into that which is informative. So some of those data sources I listed before simply aren't informative if we think about making a genetic selection decision. And then we need to use the information to actually make the decision. So we don't make the decision based on something like visual appraisal and then try to rationalize the decision we made based on the EPDs. Right? That doesn't get us where we want to be. And we need to understand that bull buying or semen purchasing is an economic-based decision if we're a profit-focused or profit-motivated enterprise. And it's fair, right? I'm not going to ask you to raise your hand, but it's fair to have that honest conversation with yourself. Do I raise cattle because I'm profit motivated? If you are, then you use these tools. If you're not, fine. But don't pretend like you are. Breeding objectives. So what are those? A detailed description of the operational goals. It may include how replacements will be procured. So am I raising those? Am I purchasing those? If I'm raising them, is it coming from a desperate herd where the breeding objective may be different than another herd on ranch dedicated to a terminal objective? How and when will animals be sold? So what is my point of revenue? Is it at weaning? Am I retaining ownership all the way through the feed yard? If I do the latter, how then am I marketing them on what kind of grid? And management and environmental constraints. So what are labor resources like? What can my environment tolerate relative to genetic potential? And I made the argument earlier today that those things really manifest themselves then into economic constraints. I can change labor availability. I can change the environment. It just often costs a lot of money to do those things. So if forage availability is low, I change the environment by buying a whole lot of hay. And you're going to go home and say, that guy from Nebraska just told us to buy a lot of harvested forage. No, but I'm saying it's an option. We don't do it because economically it's not viable. Breed selection should, again, be based on the breeding objective and should contemplate, if you're a commercial cattle producer, more than one breed. So obviously heterosis and breed complementarity should be taken advantage of, but that then complicates the sire selection process because we don't necessarily have EPD that are directly comparable across breeds. We certainly have differences in breed strengths. And then there's the individual selection piece where we recognize that sire selection is a capital investment in genetics, and selection should be placed on the genetic value of an individual as a potential parent. Further, emphasis should be placed on the genetic potential of a sire to advance the breeding objective. So once I set my breeding objective, I select sires based on their genetic potential to advance that objective, whereby that objective should then be increasing net profit to my enterprise. So it sounds like kind of loose 30,000-foot business speak, which is maybe a little bit different than the way bull selection occurs currently. So the current methods, choose a breed or multiple breeds or composites, what have you, choose a or perhaps several potential seed stock vendors based on reputation, perhaps it's location-based as well, the amount of service that they provide, their guarantee, will they buy my calves back, those kinds of things. And then automatically sort through 20 different EPD and come to a rational decision. That's a lot to ask. It really is a lot to ask. We can reduce the complexity of the number of EPD by using breed association static indexes, which are extremely useful tools. And they're defined currently really as being either terminal or multi-purpose or general purpose in nature. So it's important to use these indices as they're designed. I've obviously mentioned indexes, so that's my preferred method of selecting for multiple traits simultaneously, but there are other methods, tandem selection. If I think about two traits, I select on one till I get it to a level that I like. I quit selecting on it, ignore it, start selecting on the second trait. That's horribly inefficient. And if the two traits happen to be antagonistically related, perhaps like calving ease and post-weaning gain, then once I select on the second trait, I could erode the progress I make in the first one. Independent culling levels, that's what most people do in my experience. So that's where you open up the sale catalog and you say, I have magical thresholds for these five or six traits. I'm going to start marking off the bulls, crossing them out, if they don't meet my threshold for every one. And then I'm going to put stars or smiley faces next to the ones that do, and then I'm going to go out and look at them. And if one of the ones that has a smiley face next to it doesn't look good, I'm going to take him off the list. And if one of the ones I crossed out looks good, I'm going to change my threshold until he makes it back on my list. Right? That kind of exercise. The problem with that, though, what happens if one of those bulls you crossed off missed just one of your thresholds by just a freckle, but exceeded them for everything else? Maybe in terms of his aggregate value to drive change in a positive direction for net profit was actually then the best. You took him off your list. So that's the problem with independent culling levels. So the reality, what I'm trying to drive home is, I would contend that this entire thing about choosing semen, choosing bulls, is far too complicated. There's a lot of bull sales. Okay, from Nebraska. There's a lot of bull sales. And there's a lot of bulls in each sale. And there's too many EPD. And I'm not suggesting that we stop developing EPD for novel traits that have economic relevance. I'm not suggesting that. But what I am saying is, as we continue to extend the list, we're only adding to the complexity of our commercial clientele. And so it becomes hard, if not impossible, to select on multiple traits simultaneously using only individual EPD. And in many cases, those EPD are breed specific. So if you want to compare bulls across different breeds, you have to use the additive adjustment factors available from the U.S. Meat Animal Research Center to adjust those to a common base. Also, if you're comparing, let's say, an Angus bull and a Hereford bull of the exact same additive genetic merit, okay, aggregate genetic merit. So they're the same in terms of their index value based on EPDs. And you say, and I'm going to mate them to Angus cows. One of those inherently has more value to me because of the non-additive genetic effects it brings to the table. So there are a lot of things to contemplate in that decision-making process. And although indexes do exist and are provided by breed associations, I put some vendors, so they're not all necessarily breed association derived, they don't necessarily contemplate all of these things, particularly the breed difference and the non-additive genetic effect components. That said, the indexes that do exist have been shown to be very robust against different economic scenarios. So perhaps not an exhaustive list of everything. So if your breed's not up here, I apologize. That's not because I meant to do that. I've delineated them, as I said, between terminal and general purpose. Why do I say general purpose? Pretty much everything on the right-hand side there does have, in some form or fashion, part of a terminal objective. So there is some terminal component to those. Some of you may say, but if I sell the calves at weaning, that's not terminal. Well, if I sell a steer calf at weaning, I didn't make that steer calf to be bred, right? That is a terminal endpoint. And so I just point this out. I'm not going to go through with them in detail, but to say we have a plethora of these now. And in some case, what we've done is try to simplify 20 EPDs now with a long list of indexes. And I don't know that we've done a great job of making the process simpler. So selection index in a nutshell, if we think about it, it's based on the breeding objective, which determines the traits that really go into the index. Economic parameters, so what's the value of a pound of gain? What's the choice select spread? What's the costing of a pound of feed? The relationship amongst the traits. And then the population, so the breed or the commercial population, or if I'm thinking about my herd only, what are the phenotypic means? The reason I say that is if 99% of my heifers get pregnant and only 40% of dares get pregnant with similar breeding season protocol, it's worth a lot more for dare to increase heifer pregnancy by a unit than it is me, right? So that's what I mean by herd means. And I would point out that they're designed to improve commercial level profitability. So they're not designed an optimal index to promote a breed or to correct a breed deficiency. They're designed to improve commercial level net profit. And that's a fundamental misconception of economic indices. They've been around in the beef industry for actually probably close to 15 years, but most certainly old hat to pork and poultry. So making decisions. Bull purchasing decisions, are unique to each herd as producer-specific scenarios in terms of production goals and inputs do vary. So an example of calving ease direct for use on heifers, depending on labor availability or current herd mean levels of dystocia, improving calving ease direct EPD may be more important for one of you than it is for I. Same thing with feed availability, and as a consequence, the costing of feed as it's related to mature cow weight and lactation potential. Same thing with market endpoints. Depending on how I may sell my cattle, certain traits may need to be emphasized more than others. So there is some unique things that can allow the perturbation of these based on specific enterprises. There are past efforts related to providing decision support. Some of you may recognize DESI. Anyone heard of DESI? The U.S. Mark people and others raise their hand. Right. So, and then also the Colorado Beef Cow Production Model. So really valuable tools that never saw widespread use. And I might contend that that's because the level of complexity and detail relative to firm-level inputs really restricted the number of users that could make complete use of these tools. The other thing I would mention as we think about developing a solution for some of these problems is helping producers think through the investment thought process. So obtaining the best bull for their operation, and best is a relative concept. So if the costing of two bulls exceeds, or the costing of one bull exceeds the index value difference, then maybe the quote-unquote best bull is actually not the best buy. So from an economic perspective, even though genetically he's superior, even for my breeding objective, the point is if he costs too much, then economically that wasn't the wise thing to have done. So thinking about bull selection decisions in an economic framework, I think, would be advantageous. So our proposed solution, we're calling it iGenDeck, red and black, because I'm at the University of Nebraska and we can do that. So I, of course, internet and genetic decisions. So that's our proposed solution. We were awarded a USDA grant in April of 2018. That's the anniversary date. Grant funding lasts for 3 years, so we've been at this for roughly 14 months, and our charge is to develop a web-based decision support tool to aid beef cattle producers and breed organizations in making selection decisions within and across breed, and then train key technology adopters to actually utilize the tool. And as part of this, to fill existing knowledge gaps as it may relate to breed and heterotic effects for things that simply do not exist in the literature to date. We frame three possible use cases. One is for commercial buyers wishing to make genetic purchasing decisions, seed stock sellers wanting to match their offering to commercial clientele, or seed stock buyers wishing to obviously buy germplasm from other seed stock producers. So those are the three general use cases that we've framed to date. I know this is probably hard to see, but this is just kind of a skeleton outline of maybe walking through what a web interface would look like. So choosing which use case that I described previously actually fits you. Identifying a breeding objective. So what's the sale point or the revenue point for my calves? Do I retain replacement females? Yes or no. Herd level parameters relative to economic inputs and phenotypic herd means, and then also breed composition of cows. Identification of breeds or breeders from which you may wish to select bulls. So the third tier there, the herd level parameters, we envision that being a tiered system. So somebody that really knows, like some of the commercial producers that talked earlier today in the morning session, who probably know really detailed unit cost of production, could enter a lot more detailed information than somebody, you know, like myself that says, I know I live in South Central Kansas and I have black cows, right? That's what I know about my operation. In which case, the person that has more detailed unit cost of production obviously would be able to refine those static indexes even more. That data is then used to parameterize or develop the economic index weights that then develop the index that can be applied to the listing of bulls that may be of interest. And then the last thing is individual selection, so a ranking of potential bulls in a crossbreed manner based on the net profit differences, or really based on the index that was developed using the herd-based parameters inputted by the user. So that's kind of the framework of it. Additional features then would be contemplating risk aversion. So some people, as you may be aware, are more risk-averse than others. Think about, for those of you that are old enough to have retirement funds, think about the investment strategy. You likely filled out some kind of questionnaire from a financial advisor, right, that tried to quantify your tolerance of risk. So am I willing to lose a little bit of money in the short term to possibly get larger financial gains in the long term? Or am I the kind of person that says, you know, whatever happens, I just never want to see this number go down, right? No matter what, just put it in a CD, okay? That's really related to risk aversion. And some people, if we think about calving ease, may say, I know economically it should be weighted like this, but I just can't, for whatever reason, pull calves. And that's related to risk, okay? So it may influence then the weighting of said trait in an index. And we can, or we're proposing to incorporate risk tolerance into the ranking of bulls. I use calving ease as an example. That's perturbing then an optimal index, and so we want to be able to reflect that actually does have a consequence on maximizing net profit from that decision. So reporting back to the user the opportunity cost for having made such a decision, I think, is important. So the outcomes, as I mentioned before, a listing of candidate sires and associated economic index values comparable across breeds, taking into account heterotic effects conditioned on the user's input. So it takes into account the additive, the EPD, and the non-additive heterosis genetic value, and allows for selection on net profit for an individual enterprise, but it requires, obviously, as I mentioned before, the users to be profit motivated. Similar to the risk aversion discussion, desired gains approaches could be offered. I can rationalize that best in the seed stock buyer use case. So a desired gain says, look, I need this much emphasis on this trait, right? Let's say it's docility. Look, if I don't improve docility, I'm not going to be around in this business for another 5 years, right? So I need to improve it regardless of what the economic value is right now. It's kind of a desired gains approach. And so we could offer that to commercial users as well, but again, reporting back what the opportunity cost is for having really moved away from what the optimal index is. So desired gains, for those of you that are familiar with something like residual feed intake, that's a desired gains index. It's a restricted index, which is a kind of desired gains index. So same kind of thing. So through all this, the impetus for this project is not the belief that currently available selection indices are so inherently flawed that they have little value. That's not what we're saying at all. Okay, they're extremely useful tools. Use them. What we are saying is that we think we can improve that decision-making process in a crossbreed framework and also engage the user in the development of the tool they use to select bulls, which may increase adoption of this, whatever, some 70 or 80-year-old technology. The other improvement is the ability to combine a lot of partial solutions, as I mentioned early on, into a sire selection framework, hopefully that would be a lot easier to use. So just some parting thoughts here is that we really encourage people to contemplate bull buying decisions as the capital investments that they are. I'm certainly not going to mention names, but it's interesting that the handful of seed stock producers who I'd say are really top-notch seed stock producers that have kind of quietly asked the question, what should be the level that my commercial buyers stop bidding? Because I'm worried that maybe some of them are spending, sounds weird to say, spending too much money on bulls. And I wonder if they're actually doing themselves a disservice long term. So our goal is to enable these decisions and help alleviate the cumbersome, if not near impossible, task to combine everything that really needs to be contemplated so that we can optimize the genetic selection decision. So with that, I'd like to thank you guys. That's the full naming of the grant, which is a really long and probably not very telling title. As I said, we're about 14, 15 months into a three-year project. We hope to have a workable beta version of this available to start kicking around, if you will, first quarter of 2020. So that gives you a sense of the time frame. So with that, Dare, I'd be happy to take any questions from the audience. Thank you.